WRCT Pittsburgh, the last bastion of pulchritude.
Mom and Dad used to argue about everything, especially about Dad's drinking. My family went from totally crazy to quiet, calm, and even peaceful when Mom started going to Al-Anon family groups. I wanted a better relationship with Dad, so I asked Mom if she would take me to her Al-Anon meetings, or to Alateen. I'm sure glad I did. If someone's drinking troubling you, you might be surprised at what you can learn in an Al-Anon or Alateen family group from people just like you. Call 1-888-4-ALANON or go to alanon.org.
WRCT Pittsburgh. Real vinyl.
Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh. 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to the David Pakman Show. I'm producer Pat Ford filling in for David today as he continues his paternity leave. Of course, yesterday we had TDPS correspondent Luke Beasley fill in for David. He did an excellent job. He really set the bar high, so we'll see if I'll be able to meet that threshold today for you. And then the rest of the week, we're still trying to figure out, but I can assure you that David will be back before you know it. Let's start things off today by talking about day four of the January 6th hearings, which took place yesterday. And the theme of the day was focusing on how Trump pressured state-level officials, mostly Republicans, mind you, to overturn the election results. There was testimony from three Republican election officials, Georgia Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger, who at this point we're all very familiar with, his deputy Gabe Sterling, and Arizona House of Representatives Speaker Rusty Bowers. They were all pressured to do Trump's bidding in what I would argue was criminal influence by the former president, but we'll see if the Biden Justice Department and Merrick Garland agree. Even though these three refused to go along with Trump's wishes, the then president would not take no for an answer, and he kept harassing them. During the hearing, we learned that members of Congress also tried pressuring these officials, including Representative Andy Biggs from Arizona, who called Rusty Bowers on the morning of January 6th, asking him to support decertification of the electoral votes. All three of these people testifying, Raffensperger, Sterling, and Bowers, received threats from Trump supporters after they refused to go along with the plot to decertify and send fake electors to various state houses who would then send the electoral votes to Congress. Perhaps the most emotional part of the day was when Rusty Bowers explained the protests going on at his home as all of this was going on, and even up until now, apparently protesters were bothering his gravely ill daughter, threatening the family, levying baseless accusations against him that he's a pedophile. Let's play the moment from the hearings that was perhaps the most emotional in all of yesterday.
As others in the videos have mentioned, we received, my secretaries would say, in excess of 20,000 emails and tens of thousands of voicemails and texts, which saturated our offices and we were unable to work, or at least communicate. But at home, up till even recently, it is the new pattern or a pattern in our lives to worry what will happen on Saturdays, because we have various groups come by and they have had video panel trucks with videos of me proclaiming me to be a pedophile and a pervert and a corrupt and politician. And blaring loudspeakers in my neighborhood and leaving literature both on my property, but arguing and threatening with neighbors and with myself. I don't know if I should name groups, but there was one gentleman that had the three bars on his chest, and he had a pistol and was threatening my neighbor, not with the pistol, but just vocally. When I saw the gun, I knew I had to get close. And at the same time, on some of these, we had a daughter who was gravely ill, who was upset by what was happening outside. And my wife, that was a valiant person, very, very strong, quiet, very strong woman. So it was disturbing. It was disturbing.
Bowers went on to read an entry he wrote in his journal around this time wherein he said, quote, "I do not want to be a winner by cheating. I will not play with the laws I swore allegiance to." And that really used to be what America was all about. The Republicans and Democrats could argue and try to win as many votes as they could. But then once you have the election and the votes are counted, that's it. You tally it up. The loser concedes to the winner takes office, and the loser has every opportunity to run again the next time if they want to. But you don't parade around the country saying that it was all rigged and that you really won and trying to overturn election results by pressuring officials and all this stuff. We had this long tradition of doing it right, or mostly right, in this country up until Donald Trump in the 2020 election. In addition to this moment, Raffensperger spoke about when Trump pressured him on that famous phone call to find the, quote, 11,780 votes. And Sterling spoke about how he, in real time, debunked Rudy Giuliani's lies about Georgia election officials supposedly counting fake votes for Biden. And Trump, despite the fact that Sterling had debunked those claims, decided to amplify the claims nonetheless. So one would maybe look at this hearing and think that, okay, maybe Trump supporters could be convinced by this because the accounts in these testimonies are coming from Republicans. So they'd have no agenda here, right? They're not Democrats. They're not just trying to say that Biden won for political purposes or anything like that. However, in the Trumpists' eyes, these people are rhinos. They're not true Republicans because they're not true Trump supporters. So they don't count, right? They can be put aside and discounted. These people are largely too far gone. Maybe we just shouldn't try to focus too much on concerning ourselves with trying to convince them. And instead, maybe we should look at these hearings as a possible way to get towards pressuring the Biden Justice Department and Attorney General Merrick Garland to press charges against the former president. But given that we have this long tradition of not prosecuting former presidents, I'm personally not going to hold my breath, but it's still good to learn all the different things that we're learning about because of these January 6th hearings. Donald Trump knew that he lost the 2020 election to Joe Biden and admitted as much to a White House aide in November of 2020. This actually could have implications having to do with whether he's going to get charged as a result of the January 6th hearings or in that investigation that's going on currently in Georgia, because it goes to the former president's intent, which is an important element if you're trying to show that he was willingly deceiving the American people. The aide is Alyssa Faith Griffin, who worked as the White House Director of Strategic Communications. She went on CNN's State of the Union with Dana Bash and said the following.
One of the questions that we've been asking since these hearings started is whether or not the committee can prove intent, whether the president intentionally tried to overturn the election, knowing that he actually lost. He told you in November of 2020 that he lost when you were working in the White House.
He admitted, he blurted out watching Joe Biden on TV, "Can you believe I lost to this guy?" And he actually admitted in a press conference when he was speaking to the about coronavirus in the press briefing room, he actually slipped and kind of admitted that Joe Biden won. I think intent is going to be hard. I'm not of the mind that this is going to take down Donald Trump in a legal sort of way, but I do think it's going to inform the public about a man who lost and couldn't do what we've done for the entirety of our history, which is, you know, allow a peaceful transition of power and allow who the voters elected to step into to office.
Can you believe I lost the election to this guy is allegedly the quote. And as Alyssa Faith Griffin and Dana Bash point out, you have a much stronger case of criminal intent if Trump is privately accepting the fact that he lost the election fairly and squarely, while at the same time going out in public and saying that it was rigged and it was stolen from him and all of these things. But there's a couple of reasons why I don't think that this quote in this account make it a slam dunk case by any means that Trump had any sort of criminal intent. For one, you're relying on the word of a former aide, which, although I'm sure she's credible and you could probably get her to cooperate with an investigation and testify and all these different things, it's not on video. It's not like we have the audio recording of Donald Trump saying this. And as far as we know, it's not corroborated by other sources. So that's one. She referenced him admitting he lost in another instance during that coronavirus press briefing, but it could have been one of those slip of the tongue type of things. Like, sometimes he would give this half-hearted concession where he'd say something like, a new administration will soon be taking over, which is just sort of accepting the fact that someone else is going to be taking over the role as president without accepting that he just lost the election fairly. So it's a little bit different there. Number two, and I think this is more important, I'm of the belief that as the election results were pouring in and Biden was declared the winner a couple days after the 2020 election, Trump knew that he lost, and he knew that he simply didn't get the votes that he needed to win. I don't think that initially he was actually a believer in the voter fraud stuff that he was talking about, but then as the weeks and months went on, my sense at least is that he actually did start to believe it. We suspect, without being the ones to diagnose him or anything like that, that Donald Trump has narcissistic personality disorder or something similar to it. So he was just unable to reconcile the fact that he lost because he thinks so highly of himself, right? It's this cognitive dissonance that he couldn't get beyond. And so the way that he decided to deal with it was slowly but surely convincing himself that he actually won the election and surrounding himself like with people like Mike Lindell and Sidney Powell and Rudy Giuliani and Michael Flynn, who were telling him that, oh, no, you won. And he was eventually willing to suspend reality, suspend disbelief, and just put aside his better judgment and accept it, because that went into the narrative that he was trying to arrive at the entire time, which is that actually he did win the election. That's my sense of it all. And if it really is the case that Donald Trump operates in that way, it's going to be hard to show criminal intent, because ultimately he really did believe the things that he was talking about, and that makes it all the more difficult. So I do believe that what Alyssa Faith Griffin said is true. I also suspect that that was early on in the process, and by now he's changed his mind and he really does think that he won. We're going to be back with you after the break. Stay tuned, everyone. Welcome back to the David Pakman Show. I'm producer Pat Ford filling in for David today as he continues his paternity leave. We're now finding out more having to do with the Uvalde shooting that took place a few weeks ago, and specifically the police department's failed response to it. We're now finding out that they're working with a private law firm to prevent the release of details to the public as to what exactly they were doing as a gunman was inside Robb Elementary School murdering 19 children and two teachers. We already knew that their story had changed a bunch, and we knew that they hesitated. There was a dispute over when exactly they arrived and whether they confronted the shooter at the door, whether that door was propped open by a teacher. But at the very least, it was clear from early on that they didn't follow protocol, that they waited and waited, and they didn't want to go into the school out of fear for their own lives, and that they even went so far as to hold back parents who were trying to go in and save their kids, knowing that the cops weren't going to do anything for them. In addition, we found out this week that cops were in the hallway of the school but refused to advance, even though they certainly had the proper equipment, the rifles and the guards and the shields and everything that you would need to confront a shooter. And they were also spending a bunch of time trying to find a key to the classroom that the shooter was hiding in, even though the door was unlocked the entire time. So they didn't need a key. So now the police department wants to make sure nothing more gets out. The public records they're trying to hide, which include body camera footage, the photos, 911 calls, emails, text messages, They're trying to hide all of it. A letter from the city to Texas Attorney General Ken Paxton says that the department doesn't want to release the information because, for one, it's being sued, which is somewhat understandable, I guess, but also because it includes highly embarrassing information and that the info is not of legitimate concern to the public. So how brazen can they be? They're out and out admitting that what's in the documents is embarrassing, meaning that they did wrong, that they knew that they did wrong, and that it's just not important, apparently, for the public to learn about, even though this is a matter having to do with the deaths of 21 people in the community, many of them little kids, and you're going to say that it's of no concern to the public. How can you get away with saying something like that? The city and its police department argue it should be exempted from releasing police officer training guides, policy and procedure manuals, shift change schedules, security details, and blueprints of secured facilities because these could be used to decipher methods, techniques, and strategies for preventing and predicting crime. Well, okay, to some degree, I understand this one, but clearly whatever methods, techniques, and strategies they had ahead of this mass shooting, they either didn't work or they didn't follow them. They chose not to use them. And so it would be nice to review the process and see how we could go about changing it. So this is going to be a travesty if they're allowed to block the documents from public view, especially because they've already been caught in so many lies. And the public has a right to know about this stuff, right? Because it's their tax dollars that were being spent and it was their community that was ultimately hurt by all of this and hurt by their failed response. And this is a situation that probably should lead to some criminal charges. I'm not saying that you should charge the entire police department, but certainly the officers who were there, who had the opportunity to go in and decided not to, many of them should be charged with child neglect. That's what happened to that officer in Parkland who refused to go into the school. That should probably happen to many of the officers who were on scene there. And at the very least, many of those cops should be losing their jobs because not only did those Uvalde police officers fail those 21 victims and their families, not only did they fail the Uvalde community, they also failed society at large. Like, the public needs to be able to trust that if S hits the fan, the cops are going to be there around the corner to protect them. That's why police officers get the respect and the reverence that they do among most people in the country, because they're believed to be putting their lives on the line. You can't have a situation where the community views cops as just the people who are out there giving traffic tickets or breaking up high school parties, acting like tough guys in so doing, but then not step in when a situation like this really calls for it, really calls for police attention. So let's cross our fingers and hope that this effort to block the body cam footage and the text and all the other relevant information isn't successful, because the public deserves to know about this, right? And these cops need to be held accountable for their dereliction of duty, not just in response to this specific shooting and the 21 victims, but also for the ramifications that it has for society at large. There's a right-wing radio host named Wayne Allen Root, and he actually used to come on the show a few years back. He would have these interesting back and forths with David. But over the past year or so, he's been most famous for being adamant in this idea that Donald Trump should run for Speaker of the House if indeed Republicans take control of Congress after the 2022 midterms, with the idea there being that Donald Trump can be the one to torpedo Biden's legislative agenda and perhaps be the one to oversee impeachment proceedings if Republicans decide to impeach Joe Biden for whatever reason they decide to come up with. Keep in mind that in order to be the Speaker of the House, you don't actually have to be a member of Congress, so it's not like Trump would have to run for a House seat. He could just be elected by the majority of the body if Republicans take control. And while traditionally the Speaker of the House is a member of Congress themselves, they don't actually have to be. So a while ago, Root came up with this idea. He was interviewing Trump and he was telling him all about it. And Trump said, you know, that's really interesting. No one's ever brought that to my attention before. I'll have to consider it. And it seems like at this point, Trump just doesn't want to do it, either because it would be too much work or it's just not the top job in government. So he just doesn't want to pay any mind to it. So this prompted Wayne Allen Root to ask Donald Trump about whether that means Trump supports Kevin McCarthy to be House Speaker if Republicans take control of Congress. And Trump didn't want to say that he necessarily supports Kevin McCarthy. Let's take a look at this clip because it really is interesting and it has to do with this narrative having to do with Republican infighting.
You know, I was the guy who first brought up the idea of you running for Speaker of the House if we win in November. And you like the idea, but you never acted on it. And you've now endorsed McCarthy for Speaker of the House. Why don't you consider running?
No, I haven't.
You haven't?
No, I endorsed him in his race, but I haven't endorsed anybody for Speaker.
Okay. So why not consider?
Now, that's super interesting because, of course, we know from that leaked audio that came out a few weeks ago that right after the January 6th attacks, Kevin McCarthy was fed up with Donald Trump. He said that he was ready to move on from him, which makes total sense because McCarthy's life was put in danger that day, as were the lives of other members of Congress and Mike Pence and congressional staff and Capitol Police. But then it turned out that a few days later, McCarthy saw the polling and he realized that Republican voters were not so ready to move on from Donald Trump. In fact, many of them liked the insurrection. So McCarthy and the rest of the GOP, they had to do a 180 and go back to groveling at the feet of Trump. So this means that Trump, who still has, by all accounts, a hold of the Republican Party, if he decides to endorse someone else for House Speaker, he's probably going to get his way and McCarthy won't have much to say about it. But also, Donald Trump went on to cite a different reason for why he's upset with Kevin McCarthy. And I found this one really interesting. Let's take a look at this.
We have some great warriors, Jim Jordan, the whole group, Jim Banks. We have some very good people that, you know, fight very, very hard. Unfortunately, a bad decision was made. This committee was a bad decision not to have representation on that committee. That was a very, very foolish decision.
Right.
Because, you know, they try and pretend like they're legit. And only when you get into the inner workings, you say, what kind of a thing is this? It's just a one-sided witch hunt.
Donald Trump is mad at Kevin McCarthy for not making the Select Committee investigating January 6th bipartisan. How about that? And of course, you do have Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger on the committee, but they can just be written off as anti-Trump rhinos by Trump and his supporters. So apparently they don't really count. This is incredible to hear, though, because when the idea of the committee was first proposed, McCarthy and Republican leadership, they were actually on board with the idea of investigating January 6th and the lead up to it, making it a truly bipartisan panel because they too were affected by what took place at the Capitol that day. But then as time went on, they decided it would be too politically risky because it would make Donald Trump look bad, it would make the right look bad, and so they just decided we as a party are going to move on from January 6th and we're not going to have our members serve on this panel aside from Kinzinger and Cheney, who we can't control. Now that Democrats, along with these two Republicans, have moved on and said, okay, we're just going to do it without you then, Donald Trump comes out and says, why don't we have Republicans on the panel? Why don't we have representation? McCarthy made a mistake here. So that really is Donald Trump for you. If you're working for Donald Trump or if you're in a position where you're expected to be loyal to Donald Trump, you're damned if you do and you're damned if you don't, because there's just no satisfying this guy. And if you do things right and you're working with him, well, Trump's just going to take all the credit for it. But if things go wrong, you best believe that you're going to receive the blame. And that's exactly the situation that McCarthy has found himself in. So that may ultimately cost him the speakership next year. And it's kind of funny to sit back and watch. Friend of the show, Crystal Ball, was on Bill Maher's real-time show over the weekend, and she absolutely schooled him on a number of topics, including whether Biden is too far left and whether Democrats are to blame for inflation and turmoil going on in the stock market right now. Now, Bill Maher, he's for sure a liberal, but he's no progressive, I think we can say. Like in the 2020 Democratic primaries, when there were all these different candidates to choose from, the person that he settled on was Amy Klobuchar, of all people. So that's the kind of Democrat that he is. And Bill Maher will often criticize the left for being too woke and too extreme and say that the left is too thin-skinned and all these different things. Crystal Ball is a co-host on Breaking Points with Sagar and Jetty, and she also has a podcast with Kyle Kalinske called Crystal Kyle and Friends. She is a true progressive by all accounts. We can definitely say that for sure. And she absolutely took Bill to task when he tried to do the I'm on the left, but I criticize the far left routine. So here are the two debating whether Biden's approval numbers tanked because he went too far to the left.
Here's my question about Joe Biden for you two. Has he pandered to the far left, A, too much, B, too little, not at all? Because AOC would say not at all.
Well, if you look,
other people would say he panders way too much to the far left.
If you look at the trajectory of his presidency, at the beginning of his presidency, he did some of the things that myself as a person on the left would like him to see. He passes the COVID relief bill, and lo and behold, he had very high approval ratings.
You're not always on the left.
Then, I am on the left. I'm a Bernie Sanders leftist.
There's the populist economic left, and then there's the woke left. And these are two separate.
In any case, let's talk about what he's actually done. So in the beginning of the administration, he passes that. Very high approval rating, doing extraordinarily well. When he puts out the left agenda in the Build Back Better and then it fails and he stops delivering for the American people, that's when he falls off.
What do you mean by the left agenda in the Build Back
Better? Well, universal pre-K.
Put meat on that.
It's okay. Not everything that I would want.
Right.
No Medicare for all. There's no Green New Deal. But you had universal pre-K. You had affordable child care. You had elder care. You had an expansion of Medicare. You had things that would have delivered for the American people. That falls apart, partly because of Manchin, Sinema, Parliament, all of that. That falls apart. And since now the American people are feeling incredible pain with inflation and gas prices and unable to put food on the table and put gas in the car, and he's basically seeded the ground and said, there's not much I can do. I just hope the Fed gets this under control. Yeah, the approval ratings have fallen off a cliff. That's nothing to do with the left. I wish the left had more power. In fact, I think the left is the only part of the political spectrum that has offered anything to deal with inflation, gas prices, and the current economic situation that doesn't just involve, hey, let's trigger a recession and kill people's wages.
This is the correct assessment from Crystal Ball here. Joe Biden was super popular at the beginning of his presidency because he was able to get things done, and he had an approval rating of something like 55% to 60%. As time has gone on, he hasn't been able to get things passed, and so he's starting to look feckless and unable to respond to some of the challenges that we as a country are facing, and so his approval numbers have gone down accordingly. And notice how Bill steps in there and tries to reset by saying, Crystal, you have to slow down, you have to be more clear and concise, as if what she was saying wasn't already super clear and concise. And he does this later on. It's just like a rhetorical crutch that he's using here because he realizes that he's outmatched when it comes to the facts. Next, they're discussing inflation and the reasons for it. And Bill just has a difficult time recounting the historical events of the past couple of years. Let's roll that.
Part of this inflationary problem is because we put too much money into the economy. There's way too much government spending, and that's why we have inflation. So that's a large part of that.
That is basic economics. And that is secondly, not basic economics. We had this thing called a pandemic. We had a supply chain crisis. Okay. And by the way, there's a war in Ukraine.
It's played a role.
So to act like the only reason we have problems now is because people got a little bit of money in their bank account is just not honest.
And you, a little bit of money? They got more than we spent in World War II. So you don't act like we had to react to the pandemic exactly the way we did. We had to spend $6 trillion.
Okay, but how about the trillions that the Federal Reserve shot at Wall Street? For some reason, people don't get upset about that.
What did you say?
Fueled the trillions of dollars the Federal Reserve shot at Wall Street to backstop the stock market and the bond market. No one gets upset about that, even though that was a massive factor in inflation.
I don't know what you're talking about. What do you mean shot at Wall Street? What are we talking about?
We're talking about buying assets, buying stocks, buying bonds, buying treasury bills so that they expand the balance sheet. This is during the crisis, the coronavirus crisis. When the stock market crashed, that is what the Fed did. They went into action. They shot trillions of dollars.
But the stock market didn't crash during COVID.
Now it's crashing. It's crashing now.
It crashed, and the Fed came in and backstopped it. That's what happened.
It crashed, and we never heard about it?
No, it crashed. Go back and look at it. It fell off a cliff.
When?
The Treasury bond market stopped functioning, and the Fed took extraordinary action it's never taken in history.
I don't remember that.
Somehow no one gets upset.
It made the first week of the pandemic.
Somehow nobody gets upset about the rich people who got tons of money and tons of support, way more than working class people did.
My
God, people were able to feed their kids and they had a little bit of money in their bank accounts. It was the worst thing in the world.
No.
That is one small part of the inflation story. And is, by the way, not the only thing that we can deal with to get out of this mess.
So once again, there's that rhetorical crutch that Bill uses by saying, shot at? I don't understand what you mean, shot at. You have to explain what you mean by this term, as if we don't all understand what Crystal is saying when she says shot at. She means pumped up, infused, added to, but Bill has to get super pedantic and focus on this one term because he's losing the exchange and he recognizes that. And then he doesn't remember somehow how the stock market crashed at the very beginning of the COVID pandemic. It certainly did. The major indices plunged about 30 to 40% at the start of the pandemic before quickly bouncing back because of, yes, the Federal Reserve announcing their commitment to bailing out companies and buying up debts. Now, even though Bill should know about this because he follows news and politics and he does a show about news and politics and you'd think he would be up on world events, I kind of give him credit in a weird way for not remembering that the stock market crashed at the beginning of the pandemic, because Bill is obviously a very well-off person, and so he most likely has a bunch of money in the stock market, so he must have lost a ton of money at the very beginning of the pandemic before, yes, quickly gaining it all back. So you'd think that, like many other rich people, he would have been freaking out at the very beginning of the pandemic for losing all that money, but apparently it didn't faze him, so to some degree I think that makes him look good, in my opinion. But the broader point is the one that Crystal made, which is that When the government bails out the stock and the bond markets, that's just solid economics, right? You know, that's just what we're supposed to do as a country. But then when money is given to the middle class and the working class in the form of unemployment checks and stimulus checks and child tax credits, that's blamed for tanking the economy, and we sure as hell can never do that again. So excellent job there by Crystal, and I kind of get the sense that maybe she won't be invited back on Bill Maher's show anytime soon because she really made him look bad. Welcome back to the show. So we're still awaiting a number of crucial decisions from the Supreme Court, and with their term expected to come to an end at the end of June, it's shaping up to be a wild week in politics. Obviously, the big one on everyone's minds right now is the abortion rights decision. We believe that the court is expected to overturn Roe versus Wade in the coming days or weeks. But there's also some other important decisions upcoming that I thought that I would bring to your attention, including on issues like environmental protection, gun control, and the Trump-era Remain in Mexico policy. So let's go through them, starting with the big one, abortion, Dobbs versus Jackson Women's Health Organization. That's the name of the case that's expected to be decided on, and the policy that makes abortion banned in Mississippi after 15 weeks, outside of limited circumstances like medical emergencies. We know that based on the leaked draft opinion written by Justice Samuel Alito back in February, that it's believed that the court will rule in favor of the Mississippi law and go broader to throw out the 50 years of precedent that is Roe versus Wade and the 30-year-old Casey versus Planned Parenthood decision. There is hope among progressives that between when this draft was written and now that Chief Justice John Roberts was able to pick off one or two conservative members of the court and get them to change their mind. But given how much of a hot-button political topic this is and how Republicans have tried for decades to overturn Roe versus Wade, I wouldn't hold my breath for it, right? It seems like Roe versus Wade likely will be overturned, but hopefully I'm proven wrong. The question then will be, if Roe versus Wade is overturned, will we see this large public outrage? And will this get a lot of attention? Because maybe you can argue you've already let the air out of the balloon because we found out about this leaked decision back in May. So is this already expected? Will there not be that much backlash? We'll just have to wait and see. Or hopefully we don't wait and see because it doesn't end up actually happening. But we'll find out soon. There's also this case on the docket called West Virginia versus Environmental Protection Agency, which is all about the federal government's ability to create environmental regulations. A bunch of Republican attorneys general from states with a big fossil fuel industry presence, like West Virginia, argued that the EPA and other executive branch agencies should not be allowed to set their own rules and regulations in place when it comes to things like regulating greenhouse gas emissions, and that only Congress should be allowed to do that. It's another one of these examples of Republicans waiting and waiting until they had a conservative majority in the court to bring up these issues to the high court. And now that they have that majority, they want to strike while the iron is hot. So we'll see how that ruling goes. There's also a gun control measure case called New York State Rifle and Pistol Association versus Bruin, which is the biggest gun case that the court has ruled on since the D.C. versus Heller case back in 2008. That decision had to do with whether an individual has the right to have a gun inside their home. This case has to do with whether a person has the right to have a gun outside of their home. New York, as we know, has very strict gun control measures, and citizens have to show a proper cause in order to get a concealed carry permit. So if this case goes in the right wing's favor, we may see many of these gun control measures across the states be overturned effectively, and maybe concealed carry will be the law across the land. We'll just have to find out. And obviously that has big implications in the wake of the mass shootings in Buffalo and Uvalde. And then finally, we have Biden versus Texas, which is over the immigration policy known as Remain in Mexico. That requires people seeking asylum to stay in Mexico while they await their hearings, which can often be very dangerous for them. And then they're often subject to the will of Mexican officials, and they have to wait for months or years up until their court date in the U.S. comes up. And so the Biden administration has tried twice to end the policy, but lower courts have rescinded it, meaning that it's now going up to the Supreme Court. So we'll soon find out the ruling on this one. There's also another eight or so decisions upcoming. So a lot to be had soon. And, you know, this kind of goes back to the conversation we often have about how elections have consequences, because, of course, Republican presidents over the years have been able to put justices on the court that get approved by a largely Republican Senate. And, you know, if we had Democratic presidents and senators over the years, we probably would have more left-wing justices and we wouldn't be in the mess that we're in right now. It looks like a lot of these decisions are not going to go in our favor. Hopefully some of them do, though, and we'll just have to wait and see. But we'll probably know soon, and that's the latest on the Supreme Court and their upcoming decisions. As we await the official Supreme Court decision on abortion rights, red states across the country are continuing to pass restrictive abortion measures with the idea that they can be challenged up to the high court or that they can just be outright allowed to stand if and when Roe v. Wade is overturned. The latest such example comes from Louisiana with a bill that they have passed. Governor John Bel Edwards, who is a Democrat, mind you, but a so-called pro-life Democrat, he has signed into law Senate Bill 342, which is a trigger law that will do away with abortion in almost all circumstances. It does carve out exceptions for medical futility and ectopic pregnancies, but it does not carve out exceptions for rape and incest. There's also a penalty in there for abortion providers with sentences ranging anywhere from 10 to 15 years in prison. Luckily, there is no criminal penalty for women who seek and get abortions in the state, as has been the trend in many of these bills in red states across the country lately. The governor said that he wishes that there was an exception for rape and incest, but he decided to sign the bill into law anyway. He explained this in a statement saying, quote, "I am pro-life and have never hidden from that fact. This does not belie my belief that there should be an exception to the prohibition on abortion for victims of rape and incest. However, vetoing Senate Bill 342 would not accomplish that end. In fact, vetoing Senate Bill 342 would leave fewer exceptions in place than if the bill becomes law and would further confuse whether pregnancy begins at fertilization or implantation. For these reasons, I have signed Senate Bill 342 into law." Now, I thought that this story offered an opportunity to talk about some of the leaps in logic when it comes to the right-wing view on abortion, particularly when it comes to not prosecuting women who have abortions and also when it comes to carving out exceptions for rape and incest. So starting with the first one, most Republicans at this point don't want to see women prosecuted who have abortions. They may want to prosecute the medical providers, but not the women themselves. And to me, that doesn't really make sense given their logic, right? Because if you buy into this idea that abortion is murder, well, shouldn't you hold accountable not only the person who is actually doing the murder, but also the person who called the hit? Like, if in this current society, as things are, not only does a hitman get in trouble and get prosecuted if they kill someone, also the person that ordered the hit gets in trouble as well. So why wouldn't the same be true for a case having to do with an abortion? Also, the leap in logic when it comes to Republicans on this issue has to do with the rape and incest thing, because they argue that life begins at conception, all life is sacred, God has a plan for everyone. Why would that not apply to a woman who gets raped? Now, certainly, I don't think she should have to carry a baby to term and have that be a constant reminder of the tragic event that happened to her, but many of these Republicans think that there should be these exceptions carved out, and to me, it doesn't really seem to make sense if the whole reason that they're against abortion is because they believe that life begins at conception and they believe that it's murder to kill a baby in the womb. So given their logic on these different things, to me, it just doesn't make all that much sense. And sadly, no longer are these conversations hypothetical merely, because now we're starting to see abortion get banned in states across the country. Certainly that's going to be the case if Roe versus Wade is indeed overturned. These trigger laws are going to get enacted, like this one in Louisiana, and we're going to have these conversations, and to my understanding, Republicans simply aren't ready to have them. So that's the latest on one of these abortion bills that are being passed in a red state, and I'm sure there are more to come. Welcome back to the show. Producer Pat Ford filling in for David today as he continues his paternity leave. So Joe Biden is weighing whether to set in place a gas tax holiday in response to the ballooning gas prices, which have actually come down a little bit in recent days, and I'll get to that in a second. But as I'm sure many of you know, there's a federal gasoline tax. It's 18.3 cents per gallon, and the money goes towards restoring roads and bridges all across the country. But with prices of gasoline at around $5 a gallon right now, there's this idea floating that maybe it would be a good idea to provide temporary relief to Americans who are feeling it at the pump and suspend the gas tax. The decision is supposed to come from the Joe Biden administration at the end of the week. However, you really need Congress to enact this. Biden said that he is also weighing whether to send Americans gas rebate cards, saying that that's part of what they're considering and that's part of the operation. Previously, the administration said that it would be too difficult to put in place a system for gas rebate cards, but now they're taking another look at it. When it comes to the gas tax holiday, I get the sense that if Joe Biden wants it, the Democrats are going to go along with it and he'll be able to get the votes. Although, you know, Democrats are often cautious about doing anything that will do away with, funds for things like infrastructure. The question is, would Republicans go along with it, though? Because more than they want to actually fix these issues surrounding inflation and high gas prices and the like, they want to have something to attack Joe Biden on. So they're totally happy, in my opinion, seeing gas prices go up and up and up, because it gives them a greater chance possibly of winning in the midterm. So maybe they'll oppose Joe Biden's tax holiday idea and then turn around and blame him for the high gas prices. The AAA national average for a gallon of gasoline right now is down to $4.96, which is still exceptionally high, but it's down from $5.02 a week or so ago. So this could be a sign that we've reached the peak, could be a sign that gas prices are going to trickle down from here on, but it's still too early to say. And then you think, okay, if we move towards suspending the federal gas tax, we're looking at an average of $4.78 per gallon or so. That does sound a lot better, but is it going to make a material difference for the average American? Because let's say right now it costs, say, $80 to fill up your tank. Well, now it's going to go down about $3. It'll be $77 to fill up your tank, which, I get it. For the average people out there just trying to make ends meet, it could make some difference, right? But I think for the most part, this is more about politics. It's more about making it so that Joe Biden looks like he's trying to actually solve the issue. And for some Americans, it just helps sort of at the psychological level, that if you drive by the gas station, that the numbers are going down a little bit, that it's now $4.87 instead of $5. That helps a little bit, right? We have the same conversation whenever we talk about the idea of taking more oil out of the Strategic Petroleum Reserve, that it can do some good, right? But at the end of the day, it's only going to save you about 10 cents a gallon, 20 cents a gallon. So is that going to be a substantial difference for most Americans? And obviously a big factor in the high price of gas right now isn't just the pandemic recovery and inflation and Putin's war on Ukraine. It's also greed from the oil and gas companies, which are experiencing record profits at the moment. Joe Biden said about this that he's going to be speaking with the oil and gas CEOs, members of his administration specifically will, so they can get an explanation as to how they're able to make $35 billion in the first quarter of the year while the average American is struggling. So that's the latest on gas prices. They are coming down a little bit, but they would come down quite a bit deal more if Joe Biden and the Democrats and the rest of Congress decide to suspend the gas tax. A former gas station manager in California is out of a job right now after making the mistake of selling premium gasoline for 69 cents a gallon instead of $6.99 a gallon. The man in question is named John Cesena, and he worked at a Shell station in Rancho Cordova, California. Once customers realized that there was a mistake, they flooded to the gas station, and wouldn't you know, they were totally willing to take advantage of that 90% discounted gasoline. I'm surprised they didn't show up with buckets and everything else they could to store that gas, because prices for gasoline right now are at record highs, especially over in California, $7 plus per gallon. You'd think that they would try to do all they could. But the problem is, obviously, that nothing comes for free. And this was a small, independently owned gas station. And ultimately, there were about $20,000 in losses that resulted from all of this. Susanna said about this, quote, once I realized what was going on, I immediately thought we had been robbed, and I was scared that something terrible had happened to the cashiers. He was unfortunately fired over this mistake, and he said about it, quote, even though it cost me my job, it's fine, because the truth is, you know, it was my fault. So he's definitely in good spirits over this, and you can't help but feel bad for this guy. Everyone makes mistakes, right? Everyone types in the wrong number here and there. Everyone will put in a typo. And for this guy, it just happened to result in $20,000 in losses for his company. Now, for most people, that's where the story would end. But in John's case, it actually continued, because his sister felt so bad about it that she decided to set up a GoFundMe to help the newly unemployed John make up the lost funds to his former employer. The GoFundMe was hugely successful. It surpassed the $20,000 mark that they were trying to raise, actually reaching and surpassing $24,000. John's sister said about this, quote, he doesn't have to pay it back, but just the fact that he is doing it and wants to do it shows a lot of character and honesty and responsibility, and I'm really proud of him for that. You gotta wonder, how can this guy stay fired, right? Like, for one, this was an honest mistake, which I understand sometimes people can get fired for honest mistakes. Honest mistakes can kill people, or they can, as in this case, cost a company $20,000. But then even after all of that, he didn't become a disgruntled former employee like most people would do in that circumstance. No, he raised the money not to pay for his own living expenses, but to pay back his former employer. And then some, right? Because he actually raised $24,000. So if anyone deserves their job back, it's this guy. Maybe if he's not able to get the job back at the gas station, I'll have to talk to David about hiring him at the show, because this is exactly the type of commitment and character that we want in an employee here. And if he makes another mistake, if he makes like a typo for us, well, it's probably just going to result in a YouTube title being mislabeled and we'll have to go in and fix it. It's not going to likely result in us losing $20,000. So this is maybe not the most important story, but I thought that with all this craziness surrounding gas prices, it would be an interesting one to bring to your attention today. MyPillow CEO Mike Lindell, or as he's better known, Mike Pillow, believes that Walmart is trying to cancel him because they decided to pull his products from their stores. Lindell was told on a Zoom call with Walmart officials about 2 weeks ago that the retailer would no longer be selling MyPillow in their stores. It would instead exclusively be selling them on the Walmart website. So that to me sounds like a half measure, because they're willing to sell his products still, just not in the retail stores, only in the online stores. And I think we can go further and maybe call it a quarter measure, because if the idea is you want to disassociate with this guy because he's become a controversial figure, well, he's been that way for well over a year now. Like, it's been well over a year since he's gone down the rabbit hole of spewing election fraud conspiracy theories, and plenty of other chains have already broken ties with him, like Bed Bath & Beyond, Wayfair, Kohl's. They've all said we want nothing to do with this guy. So why is Walmart only now saying, you know, he's really gone off the deep end, we want to start to cut ties with him? Well, Mike Lindell is acting like this is a major travesty, and he went on Lindell TV, his own TV broadcasting network, to complain about the whole thing.
It's been the same rating, if that's what you're talking about, at Walmart forever, in 10 years. And I said, so what is that? He goes, well, we put this new rating and you have to be at a 4. And I go, when did you put this in? You ready, everybody? He goes, over 2 years ago. I said, wait a minute. So you put it in over 2 years ago, and now you're saying you can't carry my pillow 2+ years later because of a rating, when we have sold $20 million of my pillows a year and more, maybe upwards of $40 million in your store? And you're telling me that you put this thing in 2.5 years ago? And I said, I get it. You're canceling us. And he had this smirk on his face, and I slammed the computer. Disgusting. Shame on you, Walmart. Shame on you. You know, just because you thought you could wait until now for the American people, for the people of this country, to sit there and do a slow cancel out, it's just as bad. You should have just done it on day one when I stood up with the evidence out there. That's what they should have done, Brandon. You know, they're cowards. They're disgusting.
You gotta love how the right wing in this country are always so eager to use their buzzwords even when they don't apply at all. Like, the new one they've been settling on recently is groomer. Whenever we say that teachers should be allowed to teach their students that gay people exist in society, and sometimes men marry men and women marry women, and that's all well and good, well, the right will call that grooming, even though obviously that term does not apply in that situation. It's the same with cancel culture. Like, Walmart is not canceling you, Mike Lindell. They're just making a business decision that they think is right for them and their consumers, and they have every right to do that. It's not canceling or anything like that. And when it comes to the voter fraud narrative stuff that Mike Lindell loves to push, ever since this all started after the 2020 election, we've wondered who actually believes this and who doesn't believe this. Like Rudy Giuliani, for example, Sidney Powell, many of these Republican senators and Congress people, I don't actually think that they believe in the voter fraud stuff. I think that they're just paying lip service to it to get on Donald Trump's good side. Mike Lindell, on the other hand, this guy definitely believes it. He has to believe it. I mean, he had a decent enough reputation before all this started, before he decided to hitch his wagon to the Trump train. He had a successful business going. Now his pillows are being taken out of stores all across America, and he's being sued by Dominion Voting Systems for well over $1 billion. And, you know, he's had such a fall from grace. Like, he definitely didn't have a material advantage to doing this. He definitely believes this voter fraud stuff. And it's sad to see, in a sense, but maybe you can also say he has what's coming to him. All right, that's going to do it for today's episode of the David Pakman Show. I am going to be hosting today's bonus show as well, so if you want to check that out, make sure to become a member or a patron. You can go to joinpakman.com, or you can go to patreon.com/DavidPakmanShow and sign up at the $5 level. to everyone who's not going to be watching the bonus show, I'll see you next time I do this. And to all the members and patrons, see you on the bonus show.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
RCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1949.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beats in Pittsburgh. Right here on WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
For those of you concerned with your health and the new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
WRCT, the inside from way out.
Folks, glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a once-over.
USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT, the in sound. From way out.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Nuclear Holocaust. It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM.
My fellow Americans, I would just like to say now, as an expert on the subject, that WRCT Pittsburgh does not blow. Thank you.
Yo, what's up? How y'all doing out there in Techno Land? RCT Techno DJs in the house. Oh yeah, bringing you the only fat beat.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
Would you like to take the sounds of your favorite radio station to places you never thought possible? Well, now you can, because WRCT is live on the internet. Just point your browser to www.wrct.org and click on our live MP3 broadcast. Now you can go out of town without any feelings of loss or regret for leaving us behind, because we're just a mouse click away. WRCT, live on the internet. Because why should Pittsburgh have all the fun?
WRCT Pittsburgh, meaty and full of flavor since 1940.
WRCT, the in sound from way out.
For those of you concerned with your health new USDA organic product standards, WRCT Pittsburgh would like to inform you that all our DJs are genetically modified to bring you best music.
Hey there, folks. Glad you could join me for all the best, the smoothest of the smooth, the cool and gentle sounds of what we call, jazz. Tired of the fluffy stuff? At WRCT Pittsburgh, jazz is a one-syllable word.
It's a very serious problem, and one that faces all of us. Fortunately, here at WRCT Pittsburgh, we broadcast from a steel-reinforced concrete basement. So we'll be playing music long after your sorry corpse has evaporated in a blinding flash of light and heat. I hope this thought comforts you. WRCT Pittsburgh, 88.3 FM. Now and forever.
DJ Heim from Forest, and you're listening to 88.3 WRCT.
Depose from the faint. Do you think I'm hot? You're listening to WRCT Pittsburgh.
WRCT. In sound. From way out.
Before we get started, I'd like to remind you that the views, thoughts, and opinions expressed in this show are solely those of individuals involved and do not necessarily represent those of WRCT Pittsburgh and its members.
From New York, this is Democracy Now!
It was midnight when the quake struck. The kids and I screamed. One of our rooms was destroyed. Our neighbors screamed, and we saw everyone's rooms.
A massive earthquake hits Afghanistan. It's killed more than 1,000 people, with the death toll expected to rise, as humanitarian appeals for the country now ruled by the Taliban have not yet seen major responses, and half of Afghanistan already faces acute hunger. We'll get an update. We'll also look at the looming global food shortage amidst the war in Ukraine, one of the top wheat suppliers to Africa. We'll go to Somalia, where as many as 13 million people are already facing severe hunger amidst an ongoing drought.
1.5 million children below the age of 5 are already malnourished, and we expect that 366,000 of them may not survive through the end of September.
Then we'll look at the World Trade Organization's decision on COVID vaccines.
After 18 months of negotiation, last week we learned that rich countries and the pharmaceutical industry are going to get their way at the World Trade Organization. There was a window of opportunity for them to temporarily share their intellectual property so that the world could have access to medicines, and they refused.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. Aid workers and Afghan authorities are struggling to reach areas devastated by an earthquake Wednesday that killed more than 1,000 people, injured more than 1,600 near the city of Khost. It was the deadliest quake in Afghanistan in 20 years. There are reports entire villages have been destroyed. Survivors are using their bare hands to rescue people trapped under the rubble. Communication lines are down in parts of the area, and torrential rain has washed away roads, making many areas impossible to reach. Recent flooding has killed at least 400 Afghans. The Taliban has called for more international aid, while saying sanctions have hampered the government's ability to respond to the multiple crises facing the country. On Wednesday, the UN Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs pledged to help Afghanistan.
It's in a country that's already on the brink. We know that. Food security situation is where we're talking about. We're close to a famine-like situation. So people are really already hanging on by a thread. So when this disaster comes on top, the de facto authorities in Afghanistan did reach out and asked the UN for help. Of course, we stand ready to help anybody in Afghanistan.
The House Select Committee investigating the January 6th insurrection is holding its fifth public hearing today. Democracy Now! Will live stream it beginning at 3 p.m. Eastern at democracynow.org. The committee will focus on Donald Trump's efforts to pressure the Department of Justice to overturn the 2020 election. Witnesses will include former acting Attorney General Jeffrey Rosen, who took the post following the resignation of William Barr. The committee's pushed its next hearing back to July in order to give committee members more time to review a flood of new evidence into Trump's coup attempt, including previously unknown video of President Trump and his family and associates recorded by a documentary filmmaker before.